107th Grey Cup is here this weekend. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Hamilton Ticats. It is go time to see which one of those franchises will end their drought and hoist the Grey Cup. Welcome to Third and Long. I'm Andy McNamara, and you're listening across Canada on the Sportsnet Radio Network and on sportsnet.ca. Make sure you give me a follow on Twitter at AndyMC81, the show at Third and Long CFL, the number 3RD and Long CFL, on Instagram too at AndyMCSports. So this is what I got for you today, people. Okay? Gonna get you all ready. The storylines, both sides, and we're gonna do some predictions. We're gonna do some fantasy. We're gonna get in behind the helmet of Speedy B. Brandon Banks of the Hamilton Ticats will join me in about 15, 16 minutes time from the Ticats, over 1,500 receiving yards, an MOP candidate. So we'll chat with Speedy B. And not just this season, but for Banks, his career, the evolution where he was just coined as a special teams guy for the longest time. That was it, special teams. And he was a great one. But the way he's been able to develop, we'll get into that and his expectations and thoughts and getting ready himself and the Ticats for the Grey Cup. Also, before that, will be Chris O'Leary, senior writer from CFL.ca. Go over the coaching matchup, friends, teammates, fellow assistant coaches on the same team, Orlando Steinhauer and Mike O'Shea, and the matchups, some things to expect, some predictions from Chris O'Leary, and then we'll get to my guy Ben Kramer from Daily Roto and CFL.ca, some CFL fantasy tips for the DraftKings contest for Grey Cup, as well as some betting advice. We'll look at the over-under. We'll look at the spread. We'll see the money line and a couple prop plays as well. Get you all ready for the 107th Grey Cup. Now, this won't be the last episode of Third and Long. Next week will be the season finale. We'll do a 2019 season wrap-up about the Grey Cup and really dive into the storylines for the offseason because there are plenty of them. But first, let's start the show. Go out west. He's in Calgary. Let's go to Chris O'Leary, senior writer from CFL.ca. Chris, you just got done with the coaches' press conference. You have Orlando Steinhauer and Mike O'Shea, and it's an interesting dynamic between the two, of course, because they were teammates. They were they've come up together. They were former players. They're on the same coaching staff. And you wrote an article on CFL.ca that I thought is very interesting, and it's kind of like the Jim Barker Bowl a little bit because he gave up both these guys their starts, right?
He did, yeah. And they actually spoke about Jim in their press conference this morning, which was probably one of the more entertaining coaches' conferences that I've sat in the last few years. But they said that Jim Barker, I think called both of them kind of out of the blue. I think they were both kind of looking to move on to careers outside of football, and Barker kind of pulled them in, I think in some cases, you know, within a day or two of starting a new job in kind of the real world, got them back on his coaching staff. And then once they were in the building and kind of working together, I think they both really appreciated that Jim just kind of let them work. They both said that, there wasn't a lot of micromanaging. He was there if they needed him. And, you know, there were meetings throughout the week where they kind of connected on ideas and game plan and stuff like that. But I think they both really appreciated just kind of the freedom they got to kind of learn and develop as coaches. I know Mike O'Shea said specifically that it was a great first place for him to be and kind of to just get a feel for coaching and for a team and for the league. And obviously, you know, you see the results here as these two guys now as head coaches meet in the Grey Cup.
Yeah, both branching out from the Toronto Argonauts, and now it is Hamilton, it is Winnipeg, and it is these two coaches head-to-head. So it is that dynamic where they know each other so well personally, and you wonder how that's going to translate, if there's any sort of edge or whatever the case might be from that to this actual game. So be very interesting to track that out.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris, when we look at this one, the two seasons both have had such fascinating storylines when it comes to quarterbacks. You have, of course, Hamilton, Jeremiah Masoli, MOP candidate, goes down. Uh-oh. Well,
yeah.
No problem. Let's start there. Dane Evans comes in, chatted with him on Third and Long last week. Just a great down-to-earth guy. That I don't know if it's system-based or what, but they didn't miss a beat. They didn't miss a beat when Jeremiah Masoli came out. It's remarkable, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, just speaking with the Hamilton players and coaches over the last, you know, months even, just about that. I mean, I think it's so rare. And I think everybody that kind of follows the CFL across the country, when they saw Masoli go down, I think everybody thought that was the beginning of the end of their season. I think that was only 7 games in or 7 weeks into the season. And, you know, because realistically, what can you expect out of a backup that had extremely limited experience at best? You know, to come in and take over this team that was off to such a great start. And yeah, just unprecedented. Like I can't think of a time where a backup has come in and just excelled that way. I guess maybe Ricky Ray in his rookie year, but I think that was, you know, kind of a different circumstance. But you know, you're right. To not miss a beat. I mean, you look at the season. I think that Dane had, and then just the season that Speedy Banks has had as an MOP candidate. Didn't slow down at all. And, you know, you would think there might be issues with chemistry. It might take a few weeks, or it could take a month to get back on the same page. And it just didn't. It was just, you know, it's like the show carried on the next week, and it just kept it moving. And, yeah, just a really incredible season for the Tiger Cats and for Dane Evans. I mean, he's under contract now, I think through 2021, I believe. And, either way has kind of, I think, proven himself in this league. And I think he's in a great spot now, really, for the foreseeable future, whatever that holds for him.
Well, Chris, it kind of makes you think, going back to the Johnny Manziel situation with the Ticats. Remember, it's like, why can't Johnny beat out Dane Evans? Who the heck? Dane Evans, he can't even beat out the backup. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense at the time. And one, we know, you know, Johnny didn't put the most work in. But two, it's that this Ticat team has thought highly of Dane Evans, and now it's finally getting a chance to shine.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I mean, it was clear when they traded Manziel. And I remember even hearing when Johnny was still in Hamilton and he's listed as the backup, you know, people would say, like, it's not actually Johnny as the backup. Like, if Jeremiah had been hurt last year, Dane would have been going in over Manziel. Wow. And, yeah, so, I mean, I think that's a credit to the organization. And just, you know, speaking with the Ticats this year, you know, I think they kind of look at their entire roster that way. And you look at the other injuries they've dealt with, they've had a lot of issues at D-line. I mean, they've had a running back carousel this year. They've done a really outstanding job of just building depth and just bringing in quality players, you know, just to kind of keep everything moving through the obstacles that every team comes upon in the season. You know, I think that's a huge credit to Sean Burke and Drew Allman as well.
Oh, sure. In conversation with Chris O'Leary, senior writer for CFL.ca on Twitter at O'Leary Chris. Let's flip to the Blue Bombers here. And the redemption, the revenge tour of Zach Collaros continues. Like, this is awesome. I mean, one, Zach is such a great guy. He's so likable. And he's just fallen. It just seems hard luck times, bad luck after bad break. And now he vanquished his previous team in the Saskatchewan Rough Riders last week. Now goes back to Hamilton, where we forget, Chris, in 2015, before he went down, that dude was in the MOP conversation, and it might have not even been close. And it was just injury after injury, the concussions and all that, and you have him back with Winnipeg. Like, this is the ultimate redemption story. And, you couldn't ask for anything better if he actually pulled that out. What's your vibe from Zach Collaros? Because there's some stories up. He just looks like he's enjoying himself.
He does, yeah. I think kind of what's maybe most impressive about it is just that it really is such a tumultuous journey through the entire season. If you know, when you step back and think about the three teams, you know, just being written off by just about everybody, you know, just in terms of the injuries. And he was sitting on the podium in Saskatchewan after beating his former team and, you know, going back to his first Grey Cup in 5 years. And, you know, he kind of looked the same as he did, you know, when he was speaking to the media for the first time when he got traded to Toronto, or the first time, you know, the first day he showed up in Winnipeg. He's just kind of been unflappable, right? I guess that's, you know, coaches always talk about they want that in their quarterback, that, you know, it seems like nothing fazes them. Right. And, you know, and I'm sure he's putting on a bit of a front for cameras and things like that. But such an incredible year. I mean, it's such a crazy story that you couldn't make something like that up, right? If you had said to somebody at the start of the season that Zach was going to play on three teams and you know, take the third team to the Grey Cup, and he's going to have to go through two of his former teams to win it. it just sounds absurd, right? Yeah. But yeah, just a fascinating story, and yeah, just incredible to watch. I mean, I'm one of those people that wrote him off. I thought there were too many injuries. You know, I didn't think he looked that great in Saskatchewan last year leading that offense. And, you know, I thought he was done or was, you know, going to have to shift into a backup role for the remaining years of his career. You know, and he's really pumped new life into all that talk. I mean, he's a free agent this winter, and you know, I think. I think he's going to have some options in front of him now that he certainly didn't even 2 months ago.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Because we just finished talking about the Ticats situation. Jeremiah Masoli goes down well in Winnipeg. Yeah, Matt Nichols clicking. Then it's Chris Streveler, who is much better suited in this bit of a wildcat, a backup, unpredictable role than a true starter. And Zach Kolaris, he came in, quite honestly, Chris, he came in as a flyer. Like, all right. You know, let's see. And really the expectations were quite low, and he hasn't necessarily had to light it up and pop up 400 plus yards. But look at the stat line from last week, 267, one touchdown, zero interceptions. I think if Zach Kolaris plays smart football, doesn't turn the ball over, and you really rely on that versatility of the offense where you could have Zach throw or run, or you could have Streveler under center and rush it or toss it. And then you have Andrew Harris to mix it up too. Like, it seems like they might not have the one stop. All right, this is the quarterback who's going to chuck it up. But that versatility on offense is pretty unique.
Yeah, it is, and that even came up in the press conference today. Like, that was something that I think it was Dave Naylor asked a question that said that this was something that we saw more in the 70s and 80s with a two quarterback system, and the teams have really gone away from it. So it's kind of a throwback to that. I remember talking to Hugh Campbell for something a couple years ago, and he kind of got onto that too, just the success that they had in Edmonton, where he would give a guy a half, split the game between two guys, and just because he thought that was the best way to win. But it's been so long since we've seen it, and I guess in this case, and maybe it's just due to the particular skill set of Streveler especially, but it works, right? And it's I think you've got something now. You definitely don't mess with it, and I think it kind of makes Winnipeg dangerous in a lot of ways too, right? Mm-hmm. Where do they just settle in this game and go to Zach more? Do they go back kind of to that Calgary game where they split it a little bit more and make Streveler more of the threat? And and Andrew Harris has been quiet, I think, statistically anyway, throughout these playoffs. Hasn't had like a monster game yet. Maybe in the Grey Cup they just look to Harris and just let him try to carry them for this game. It's I would think it's a tough thing to game plan for.
Well, and Chris, the crazy thing is we could see all three of the scenarios that you outlined play out throughout this game. Like, all three. You can let Harris loose. You can, if you don't like what Zach's doing early, you can park him for a bit for Streveler, put him right back in. Right? Like, that's what you have to plan, really, three different styles. And for what some fans might not realize is that takes up a lot of time for the coaching staff. And if you're going, it's like in warfare, right? If you have to defend multiple fronts, it can get exhausting, and maybe you miss something. But both these teams are so well coached. It's that's where the bit of the chess battle comes in, right?
I think so. And I think it's I think it has to be a burden on the opposing team to just kind of try and anticipate all those things. And I think it's something that's come up over the last couple of weeks. I think last week, especially just after how we saw Kolaris and Streveler play against Calgary, Saskatchewan was asked about that a lot. And I feel like it's something that you maybe won't get an honest answer on until the season's over. Right. And maybe it's a thing in January or, CFL week comes back, it's in March or something that, players are kind of through it and have processed and everything, are a little more open about it, but it has to take up a lot of time. They don't really want to talk too much about that right now, but I think that's a big factor in game prep, against the Bombers throughout these playoffs.
In conversation with Chris O'Leary, senior writer for CFL.ca. Get him on Twitter at O'Leary Chris. Chris, it's going to be the end of a drought, and you have the story up, five unique storylines to keep an eye on for this Grey Cup at CFL.ca. And one of the sub headlines is that the end of a drought, and you look back, the last time the Bombers hoisted the Grey Cup, November 25th, 1990. Tiger Cats, the last time, November 28th, 1999. So they bookend the decade. And somewhat fittingly, this is the last Grey Cup of this decade. So somebody, it's going to come to an end. It's two teams that have been close so many times, have been snake bitten on and off.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big storyline for both these passionate fan bases.
Yeah, and to me, that's the number one. And, again, it's one of the things where you sit at the start of the season and you're thinking about dream matchups for a Grey Cup. This is the one I would have picked. I wouldn't have known if it was possible. I feel like the West is always such a kind of a riddle every year. You don't know how it's really going to play out, but that most of the teams are going to be really good. To just see Winnipeg come through 28 years, see Hamilton on the 20th year. I mean, two fan bases that are just starved for this. They've seen so much heartbreak along the way. It seems like in Winnipeg over the years, through the downtimes, it seems like they've just, the fans have kind of just come to expect the worst and anticipate failure. I think it's going to be, I think just such a fun week leading into this too, just to see the fans come in the way that they always do for the fan parties and things like that, for the events leading up to the game on Grey Cup week, just to see them kind of get together and kind of celebrate. And then, unfortunately, I guess the dark side is that, one of them is going home disappointed.
Right. Well, that's it. This other storyline that you have in your CFL.ca article, it seems, Chris, like a different lifetime. It seems like a different season. Zach versus Simone. And the way this worked out, obviously, I'm sure Zach would have foregone the concussions and injuries. But in a weird way, like, what a difference if that hit did not happen. That one hit. When Zach Collaros was with the Rough Riders week one and Simone Lawrence, he got suspended two games. We would not have seen Cody Fajardo. We would not have had Zach go from Saskatchewan to Toronto to Winnipeg and really lock down Winnipeg's drive in the playoffs and get there. Like, this is the first time they've both been on the same field at the same time. They're former teammates as well.
Yeah.
Like, boy, there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, there is. And I think they're both trying to kind of get in front of it this week, where I think they've got the national media there, and they're going to be asking about this every single day.
Sure.
Zach kind of addressed it yesterday and said that they have spoken, and it's kind of, they've put it behind them. I think Simone has said kind of similar things before leaving Hamilton. I think when they arrived in Calgary yesterday, might have said something similar as well. I think maybe they realize now that this is going to be a big thing that can potentially hang over them this week. They're trying to make it go away as much as they can, so they can focus on this week. But no, you're right. It's just the way it's all unfolded, right? I mean, that was like the third play of Saskatchewan's season.
Unreal.
And you're right. If it doesn't happen, we're probably not sitting here talking about the Grey Cup as we are right now.
Yeah.
A really unfortunate way to kind of start Zach Collaros' journey this year. But a huge part of the story of their season and kind of the story of the league this year.
Yeah, you get to that point now. Fajardo cemented in Saskatchewan. Collaros, as you said, is going to be a free agent, where looked like he was going to try to cement his future with the Rough Riders. Now Winnipeg, Matt Nichols will be back next. Like, it's like, wow, that one moment just unraveled so much. Very, very interesting. Chris, I got to ask you, prediction time, man. Do you have a feel for this game? How do you think this one's going to play out?
I think sitting there Sunday watching the Tiger Cats just take apart Edmonton. I look at the season they've had, and I feel like they were kind of maybe not counted out or disrespected, but I feel like people just looking at an Eastern team racking up wins, they didn't treat it the same way that a powerful team in the West might have been received. I would go Hamilton. I just think they've been so impressive, and they've kind of made the argument throughout the season. This is an exceptional team. They're dominant. They've been history making all year. They have a slew of award winners or potential award winners on their roster. I look at all that, I just feel like the evidence is in front of us, but at the same time, Winnipeg's been counted out literally every single step of the way, especially through the playoffs, and here they are, right? So, I think Hamilton, but you could probably talk me into Winnipeg too.
Boy, and Zach Collaros, the revenge bowl coming up there. It's going to be a fun ride, a great game, we hope. Weather should cooperate. Chris, enjoy Calgary, enjoy the time, and we will talk to you real soon, buddy. Thank you so much.
All right, Andy, enjoy the game on Sunday.
There he goes, Chris O'Leary, senior writer from CFL.ca. Make sure you get him on Twitter, at O'Leary Chris. So we'll continue setting up the 107th Grey Cup Winnipeg Blue Bombers versus Hamilton Tiger Cats on Third and Long across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Third and Long across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at AndyMC81. The show at Third and Long CFL, the number 3RD and Long CFL. Getting you ready for the 107th Grey Cup between the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Hamilton Tiger Cats, live this Sunday from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Cannot wait for that. Also can't wait to talk to my next guest, Speedy B. Brandon Banks from the Hamilton Tiger Cats. What a year he's had. Brandon, man, what a year it's been for you, for the Tiger Cats, overcoming so much, having the best record in franchise history. And getting here, how are you feeling? You're in Calgary. The game is just a couple days away. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Obviously, we had a great season this year. I'm definitely happy to be a part of this organization and this team this year. Definitely was a different feeling going into this year. We got a great leader in Coach Steinhauer that got us, you know, ready for the year. And we just try to finish it off strong with the main goal that each CFL team has at the beginning of the year, and that's to win a Grey Cup.
Now, as you know, the Ticats organization has not won a Grey Cup this century. It's been since 1999. You feel the passion. You know the energy of the Ticats, of Hamilton, of that fan base. What does it mean to you and this team to be able to try to do that for that fan base that is so rabid and supports you so much?
I mean, everything. That's pretty much the main reason why I'm out here still doing what I'm doing. The main reason is to get the organization first and then the fan base second. A great coach, because obviously, like you said, hasn't been in this century that they received one. I think they definitely deserve one, and it's about that time. So we definitely want to go out there and give it all we got on Sunday to bring it back to Hamilton.
No, absolutely no doubt about it. In a conversation with Brandon Banks, wide receiver for the Hamilton Ticats, on Twitter at SpeedyBanks87. Now, Brandon, your career, I've loved the trajectory and growth, because you kind of embody what the city of Hamilton is. It's overcoming, it's hard work, because it wasn't that long ago where it was, Speedy B's a great special teamer, but that's about it, right? That's what he is. You have changed the conversation, the narrative on your whole career, now at over 30, over the last 2, 3, 4 years, and you've developed and grown. What do you attribute that to for you becoming to be able to become the most, I know you're a humble guy, but I'll say it, the most dangerous weapon in the Canadian Football League?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Coach June Jones for giving me the opportunity. I give all credit to him for recognizing my ability and giving me the opportunity to be a full-time wide receiver. To me, I think it was just me getting the opportunity of getting the ball in different aspects of the game. So, you know, me being just a returner at first, it was just I had to take advantage of what my job was, and my job was to, you know, make plays in the return game. But like you said, I've grown, and like I said, Coach Joe Jones made me a full-time wide receiver, and I'm just taking advantage of my opportunities that I'm getting right now, making the best of it.
And it's crazy. You're in the, like, Brandon, like, you're in the MOP conversation. You're in the MOP, most outstanding player conversation in the CFL. The goal is to win championships as a player, I know, but just from a personal level yourself, like, could you even imagine that if you go back five, six years, that you'd be considered, like, the best? You might win this damn thing.
Right. Like you said, man, two, 3 years ago, I wouldn't even think I'd be in this position, especially to win an MOP to where, you know, that's a mostly dominant quarterback award. And, I got to have some kind of luck for me to be up for this year. You know, a lot of things have been going my way. So I'm definitely happy for it. I'm definitely honored. And, you know, I'm take pride in this award, and hopefully I can, you know, match it with the Grey Cup so I can talk about it a lot more.
Yeah, have double the hardware. That'd be pretty fun to be able to do that. Speedy, you look at this season for the Ticats. Jeremiah Masoli coming in. We know the numbers he puts up. We know the type of leader he is. He goes down. Nobody would have blamed the Ticats if that was the season. If it was, okay, you limp in, but, well, you lost the starting quarterback. You guys had built-in excuses. Instead, Dane Evans pops in, and you guys roll to 15 wins. Like, what was it about Dane Evans coming in and for this whole team to be able to overcome, and I keep coming back to that word, but overcome the loss of Masoli, and have Dane Evans come in and just be the force that he's been on this team?
I think it was just the culture that was built around, starting with Coach O. Next man up mentality. But then again, we also had a guy, Dane Evans, that signed back with us. And we knew what he was about. We knew what his capabilities was. And it was just a matter of opportunity and the timing for him. And then, obviously, unfortunately, Jeremiah Masoli went down. And I'm glad that we had a great guy that stepped right in and, you know, continue what we trying to build over the season. And Dane did a heck of a job. And he's a true gunslinger. And he's a leader. You know, that's what quarterbacks are. And he just waited on his opportunity and made the most of it when his number was called.
Yeah, and he did it. Now, the offense gets a lot of attention, but you go up against the defense of this Ticats team every day in practice. And talk a little bit about how good this defense is, from Dylan Wynn to Simone Lawrence to Ted Laurent. Like, it is a stacked defense, and the offense is so exciting, but I think sometimes people forget about how good this D is. How is it going up against this that side of the ball every day?
Oh, man, it's an honor to go up against them guys. Obviously, like you said, we have a stacked defense, and we go up against them every day, so obviously it's bringing a better player out myself and making the competitive nature a lot a lot tougher. So I'm definitely enjoying it. I'm glad I don't have to go against them in a real game. But I'm definitely happy. And, that defense winning championships. And they got us here, and they're playing lights out football, and especially the way they played in the Eastern Final last week. They definitely got us jump started. And I'm just happy that I don't have to go against them, and I hope they keep playing lights out and continue to carry us on to win ball games.
No kidding. In conversation with Speedy B, Brandon Banks of the Hamilton Ticats on Twitter, at SpeedyBanks87. So you're in Calgary. It's Calgary. It's Grey Cup week. Do you get to enjoy yourself a little bit? Are you going to be able to get to take in some of the festival or the city, or is it all business? Because it is one of those things, like, it's special to get here, so you want to try to enjoy it, I'm sure, to some extent.
To be honest, I'm going to be honest. I'm all business. I've been here. I've been around the festivities before. I'm definitely enjoying myself and taking the moment in. But at the end of the day, I'm all here for the Grey Cup and win a Grey Cup. That's my only goal that I had going into the season, and I'm going to stick to it. And everything that got me here, I'm going to continue doing it this week and go out there and give it my all Sunday.
That's amazing. Brandon, we always like to get to know people a little bit for the fan base and behind the helmet. So yourself, if you look at your Twitter profile pic, you're standing in front of a pretty blue ocean. Like that looks like a pretty sweet vacay.
Yeah.
End of the year, if ownership said, "Hey, Speedy B, you know what, man? Go take off anywhere you want in the world." Where would your dream vacation be?
Oh, man, I'm going straight to Dubai.
Ooh, okay, why?
I'm going straight to Dubai, man. It's pretty nice and luxurious over there. Just, you know, just like a good life. I have never been, but that's just my dream goal to get to one day. Hopefully I can get there. But if Coach told me to go off and go anywhere, I'm going to Dubai.
Well, hey, maybe you'll do it with some hardware. Speedy B, thank you so much, man. Thank you for taking the time. Good luck on Sunday, and congrats on a heck of a year. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is. You heard it. Brandon Banks from the Hamilton Ticats. Let's take a second to appreciate the numbers that Brandon Banks has put up this season. And like I said off the top of them, it's been like when I was calling the Ticats games in 2015, doing the play-by-play on the radio side, he was dynamic, but he was a gadget player. He was kick, punt, returns. You know, you give him the old end around here and there and all that. But that was about it. And there was always the hope he could do more, but you never really knew. This season, 1,550 receiving yards. That betters his 1,400-plus the year before and is just over 1,000 yards the year before that. And 13 touchdowns in the air, one on the ground. Just an incredible season for Brandon Banks. It's good, and it looks like the weather's not going to be an issue. This is going to be a fun Grey Cup. What's also going to be fun is my next guest after the break, Ben Kramer from Daily Roto and CFL.ca. We'll go over some betting tips, some props, and some fantasy tips to get you ready for the 107th Grey Cup. Third and Long continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back to wrap up the 107th Grey Cup edition of Third and Long across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. It's time, folks. It is time. No more talking, no more wondering, no more thinking. It's go time in Calgary as we get set for the Hamilton Tiger Cats to take on the Winnipeg Blue Bomber. So let's go over some betting odds, some tips, some props, as well as there's still some fantasy football to play. We'll take a look at that right now as we go out to Saskatchewan for my guy from Daily Roto and CFL.ca, Ben Kramer. Ben, we got the Grey Cup matchup set, and we take a quick look back before we get into the betting odds and tips and maybe some props and fantasy awards for the CFL season and also a DraftKings Showdown contest for some CFL fantasy. But you go, listen, we know how good the Ticats are, but I kind of expected a little bit more out of the Edmonton Eskimos. And the fact that they created two turnovers through the air for Trevor Harris, the way that offense was clicking a week before, was that a statement game to you? Like, that just shows, like, okay, you cannot discount anything the Ticats do, no matter what the defense.
No, the Ticats are a really good team, but I think if there's any statement to be taken from that, it's how bad that Montreal defense actually is this season. Their offense kind of pulled them through for most of the year, and then Edmonton got a hold of a defense that was frankly really porous in the secondary and had injuries, and Harris looked good appropriately. The Hamilton defense is a really talented unit, whether it's in the backfield or whether it's up front on the line that created the second most sacks in the league this season. They're just top to back, a really great unit, despite losing players like Dean and Unamba in the offseason. They retooled, they got in some new blood, and they were really ready to play. And I think that this week, again, you're going to see Winnipeg and their offense struggle against that Hamilton unit, given that Winnipeg still doesn't really know exactly who it is. They just try and adapt right and throw something at the wall until something works.
Well, it was the under on the over-under between the Blue Bombers and the Rough Riders. Cody Fajardo, the tremendous season. Like, let's not discount what this guy did all year. Just amazing. But didn't get a touchdown in the air. One interception, 366. And it just was a bit of a slog. And what's interesting to me about the Blue Bombers is I think you say they're still trying to find themselves. And absolutely, what I take out of it is that their offense, while they might not be able to put up 40, 50 points, they're just kind of squirrely enough to make things confusing because you don't know if it's going to be Caleros throwing or running or Strevler, if you put him back there, running, or Andrew Harris, who, as we talked about before, hasn't been the same since coming back from suspension. But you can, like, it's kind of like a bit of a hodgepodge offense that is just different enough that it can throw some defenses off, right?
Yeah, they leave coordinators a whole lot to have to plan for, right? Because even if you think you know who's starting at any given position, they're willing to change their personnel at any different point in the game if it's not working. So to some extent, they don't know who they are, but to that same extent, no one else knows who they are either. And so it leaves defensive coordinators having to do a whole lot of work and a whole lot of planning and then just hoping the players are ready to adapt to whatever those changes are when game day hits. Because if Kolaros comes out and struggles initially, I'm sure you could see Strevler getting a lot of work by the second quarter even, as they just keep throwing different things out there on the field, hoping that one of them is going to click.
Yeah, they have options. They're kind of like the Rowdy Roddy Piper of the CFL. Just when you think they have the answer, they change the question, right? They twist it up and bring it back like that. So, but there we go. So that was a quick look back. But we go to, and this time of year we know, you look at the weather, people, in the Canadian Football League. Looks like, at least for now, a nice day and evening in Calgary. It's going to be sunny, 3 during the day, going to feel like 0 at night, -6 Celsius. That's, listen, for Calgary, getting to the end of November, I think most players will take that. Wind, not a big, 17 clicks, 30% chance of precipitation. If that stays the same, we're not going to see the elements play a factor in this. And I when it comes into that way, I think then that really benefits the Ticats because that's not going to limit their offense in any way.
Yeah, and their offense just has so many different ways that they can beat you, right? In the same way, nobody really knows who's going to be the ball carrier for Hamilton. You have to prepare for 5 or 6 different guys to take carries out of the backfield. And their passing game is just so prolific. It is near impossible to stop Brandon Banks. And if you decide to double team and bracket coverage over there, Braylon Addison has shown he's more than enough to be able to beat defenses deep, especially versus a Winnipeg defense that gave up the most plays of 30-plus yards this season. Hamilton is probably just chomping at the bit, ready to go downfield.
Yeah, in conversation with Ben Kramer on Twitter, at Benjamin. You can find his great work at CFL.ca and at Daily Roto. So let's begin with the betting lines here, and then we'll switch into some of the fantasy implications of it. So we look at the spread. Hamilton, 4-point favorites, which I think is interesting, and maybe it's just respect to the Blue Bombers getting to this point, but I think that spread's a little interesting. The money line, $1.61 on the Ticats, $2.37 Winnipeg payout, and over-under is set at 52. So let's go through each one of these. I'm really liking the Ticats to cover this spread, Ben. Like, I think it will be, if Winnipeg can keep it close and within striking distance early, maybe it falls to that. But if the Ticats go up by a score and Winnipeg's playing catch-up, I think they cover that no problem. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was looking for a line to initially, I figured it would probably open somewhere around Hamilton -7.
That's what I
thought. That would probably be a fair line to work from. And it actually opened at Hamilton -1.5. And it's since bumped to 3.5 in most places and 4 in some. It's Yeah, I think it's quite something. I think that's a pretty easy cover for Hamilton at only 3.5 or 4 points. I expect them to win by at least a touchdown in this game versus a Winnipeg defense that just gives up too many big plays and a Hamilton offense that's more than capable of making them. So I think, yeah, -4 is a pretty clear play for me.
Now, if you're going to go straight up winner on the money line, the smart bet is to take a shot on the Bombers, lay a couple bucks down there, $1.61, not giving you too much. So if you really, I think it comes down to this, Ben. If you think that -4 is right and you think that's the spread, I would throw a few dollars down on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at that 237 money line payout, because it's going to be closer than we think it is. I'm not going to do it. But if you feel the Bombers are going to be able to hang around and keep it within four, then you take that 237 and heck, you know what, with how much variety that Bombers offense has shown, then they do pay it out. And that's going to be a pretty good payday if you hit on it.
Yeah, and frankly, even if you just shop around online to a few different books, I think Bodog is offering 2.1 if you take Hamilton -4.5.
Okay. Well,
yeah, there's some options out there at places that'll pay out for different lines. And if you take a look around and you think that Hamilton is easily in -7 in comfortable territory, you can certainly get some pretty good lines that would pay out similar to a money line just for getting the spread that you were hoping for.
Ah, there you go. See? All right. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin. Send any of your CFL betting or fantasy questions to him or myself at AndyMC81. So that's what the money line's looking like. The over-under at 52. This is tricky to me. You had the Ticats-Edmonton's game. That one hit the over on the over-under. The Winnipeg Riders game was under. I'm a little bit torn on it. If it's me, I'm going to go slightly under. I think Winnipeg is going to be able to keep it not 4 point close, but within that kind of 6-7 mark and keep it a little bit lower scoring than that 52, but I wouldn't be shocked if it went over. I'm going to go under. What are you feeling?
Yeah, I think that line is pretty close to right on. Yeah. I don't have a hard feel either over or under on that one. In the first game that they played against each other, it was a pretty low-scoring affair, but that's the one Mazzoli left right partway through the game. Mm-hmm. In the second meeting, Hamilton really kind of blew them out of the water, and it was about a 50-point game there. But I expect this one to play a little bit closer than a 20-point win for Hamilton, so you might want to take the under if you think the weather keeps it a little bit cooler and they have to play it a bit closer to the vest. But I think Hamilton could certainly put up 35-plus, and then it's a matter of whether Winnipeg can push their total over the top or not.
Well, and here's the tricky part, too. When the reason you can't just look to season head-to-heads is because these two teams, and when they played, were so different. As you said, Mazzoli went out, and then Zach Collaros wasn't under center. So it's not an apples to apples comparison. So it's almost like you have to take whatever happened in that season series, throw it out the window no matter what, because the offense for Winnipeg is going to be so different. And in that first meeting, it was Dane Evans coming in, and we know what he's been able to do, right? So it's almost like we're looking at this as two teams who as a whole may have played each other, but from the key position groups have not.
Yeah, to some extent, you have to look at both of them as three or four separate seasons, depending on who the personnel were at a given time.
Right.
And trying to compare those four or five, six different teams as they evolved throughout the season makes things a little bit more difficult than just saying Winnipeg won or Hamilton won both matchups, just write it off.
Right. And there's some fun prop plays, of course, you can do. Halftime show. Total songs played by Keith Urban, over or under 5.5. What are you taking?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a matter of whether he's going to do the short song medleys like
that's
happened last year at Grey Cup, or whether he tries to play full versions. If he plays full versions, it's a clear under 5.5.
Under.
But if he's just doing 30-second medleys and that counts as different songs, then you could hit 6 or 7 pretty easily.
There needs to be some clarification on that. Yeah, like if it's medleys, which I think it would be, you're not going to play. You're going to want to hit as many as the tunes as possible. Yeah, that's you need some clarification on that one. Betting lines, I'd say that. You can bet, of course, over a coin toss and all that good stuff, whatever. Let's get to the fantasy side of things here. Head-to-head, of course, you can play on DraftKings.com, CFL Showdown, and this is the tricky part where there's two teams. You're going to be going star power, obviously, but the good thing is you don't have to pick by position. It's all flex spots here. on the DraftKings Grey Cup Showdown. So you don't have to pick a quarterback if you don't want. You don't have to pick a running back if you don't want. You can go all over the place. Highest priced player, obviously, Brandon Banks. And the top three price-wise are Banks, Evans, and Addison, all tie cats. Is Banks, even though everybody and their brother's going to pick it, is that you still have to play him?
Yeah, I think in general there's no reason not to. His salary is much more affordable on the DraftKings sites as opposed to the CFL fantasy contest that they've got, where he takes up nearly a third of the salary cap. Here he's less than a quarter, and it's really not a problem to fit him in, especially with some of the cheaper plays that are only around $5,000-$6,000. So I think pretty much everybody's lineup is going to start building with Dane Evans, Brandon Banks, Braylon Addison, and then just rotating different random Winnipeg receivers through the last couple of spots there and just hoping for something to hit.
And just go from there. So yeah, if we go Banks and Evans, then what do you do on the Winnipeg side? Let's get a couple of Blue Bombers in here, because Strebler really TD dependent, and he's still pretty expensive at $9,800. I'm not. I love the Calero story, but I'm not feeling it from a fantasy side. Where do you begin with Winnipeg? Do you say, hey, you know what? Harris maybe hasn't been the same guy, but damn it, it's the Grey Cup, and go with it, or are you going somewhere else?
I think most of the Winnipeg starters are pretty severely overpriced, especially in comparison to the Hamilton one.
Yeah.
So Andrew Harris, Zach Kolaros, yeah, even Chris Streveler, and even Darvin Adams, given he's been getting a lot more air yards since Kolaros took over under center, he's still pretty drastically overpriced at near 9,000, given what his projections are actually going to be. So I think probably if you're looking for Winnipeg receivers, you're just going to rotate through Lawler, Dembski, and Bailey that are all priced 5,000 or less, and just hope that one of them scores a touchdown like Lawler did in the West semifinal, in the West final.
And go from there. Any DST interest for you? Like, I'm kind of feeling maybe if this one gets out of hand, the Tiger Cats defense is going to be the cause of it, and they could, you know, get into the backfield, create some turnovers and things like that. They're priced at 5,200 on DraftKings. Or 5,400. I'm not going to go Bombers defense at all, but Tiger Cats DST, does that interest you?
I think both of them certainly hold some value. They were the two highest scoring average DST units in CFL fantasy on DraftKings this season. They both have returners that can take one back for a touchdown at any given point. They can both create sacks and turnovers. So I think both units are probably equally interesting. Even if you roll out three or four Tiger Cats in your lineup, you could still come back with the Bombers defense and find a spot in which they get a punt return touchdown or still in the optimal lineup for the week. So I don't think you want to write off either one of them and have some exposure if you're rolling out multiple lineups. I think the big contest on DraftKings allows up to 52 entries per person.
Cool.
So if you're going through there, you're probably going to want at least a handful of Hamilton and Winnipeg defenses each.
I'm with you. All right, Ben, let's wrap it up and get to, real quick, your CFL Fantasy Awards for the 2019 season, and we've enjoyed having you on so much all season long. You've been absolutely tremendous with your time and information. So who do you got for your CFL Fantasy MVP?
I think it has to be Brandon Banks. He led the league in targets, receptions, yards after the catch, and touchdowns. There was really no statistical category for receivers that he didn't lead, and he was so dominant all season, even with his contributions on special teams with multiple return touchdowns. There really hasn't been a better player in the league the last 2 years running, and it was kind of a shame that he didn't win it last year as well.
Right. So that's for MVP. What about most improved or most surprising? And most surprising can go good or bad for fantasy.
Yeah, I think it probably was McLeod Bethel-Thompson this season. Coming into the year, he'd only ever had one game of over 300 yards and multiple touchdowns, and he averaged over an interception a game. But this season, he had 8 games of over 300 yards and multiple touchdowns on what might have been one of the worst teams in CFL history with the Argos this season. So I think seeing him kind of come out of nowhere and provide amazing value on a week-to-week basis at relatively low ownership, he was one of the most surprising and improved players this season. I just hope he gets the shot to keep doing it there in Toronto.
I'm with you, or somewhere else. I'll agree with you on Banks for fantasy MVP. I'll go Cody Fajardo on most surprising, because, boy, taking over right away from Zach Kolaros and then doing what he did yard-wise and being not even a backup, but a third stringer, like his whole career, pretty special. And that was a real good run for Fajardo. Ben, brother, absolutely loved having you on every week, my man. Listen, next season we'll be here before we know it. Thank you so much. Tell people again where they can find your great work now through the offseason and into next year.
Yeah, all my content is up weekly on CFL.ca and dailyroto.com/CFL, and I'm looking forward to a bit of a break after writing out 59 articles, a couple hundred hours of radio, and getting through another season. So, it's been wonderful working with you, Andy, and looking forward to 2020.
Absolutely, brother. Okay, take care. Enjoy the game.
Yep, have a great time.
And there he goes, Ben Kramer, DailyRoto, CFL.ca, hardest working man in CFL fantasy and the betting world. That's it, folks. That'll do it. Now, I will be back next week with a season wrap-up episode of Third and Long. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. We'll review what happened in the Grey Cup, storylines, off-season projections, and everything. Because once this game is done, wow, there's a lot of news, notes, and storylines to get into as far as quarterback situations and all that around the Canadian Football League. So make sure you follow me on Twitter at AndyMCD1, the show at Third and Long CFL, the number 3RD and Long CFL. Enjoy the big game, and I'll talk to you next week. This is Third and Long across the Sportsnet Radio Network.